And as Christian Amanpour and Ray Suarez talked about yesterday in our year in review, which you can take a listen to at hereandnow.org, one of the biggest stories of the year, without a doubt, was the Supreme Court decision that legalized same-sex marriage across the country, a decision that instantly affected the lives of millions of people. It was particularly important to those who have made gay rights their life's work, including Cleve Jones, the 61-year-old man behind the AIDS Memorial quilt. He was a friend of Harvey Milk, the late gay rights activist who was elected to the San Francisco Board of Supervisors in the late 70s. I spoke with Cleve Jones in the Castro neighborhood of San Francisco on our visit there in October.
Whenever I come here, I remember the May 21st, 1979, when this intersection was filled with people fighting the police and ultimately drove the police out of the neighborhood. But it was a very bloody altercation. It was one of the most violent uprisings in the history of the gay rights movement. People talk about Stonewall. We had riots here before Stonewall and after Stonewall. But people don't know all these stories.
Well, what does it mean to you that when we stand at this intersection now, the crosswalks are in a rainbow flag colors? We're standing in front of this bar, which is now called Harvey's. What does that mean to you?
It's an astonishing thing to see such change in one's lifetime. And when I came out, when I joined the movement, it was a felony to be gay. There were no such things as gay neighborhoods. It was a very underground subculture. And today, we are part of the fabric of society, and not only tolerated, but increasingly celebrated. And it's wonderful. And it is my antidote to cynicism. I've seen change. I've seen it. I've seen real change that's transformed the lives of millions of ordinary people. So I am old, but I am not cynical. I believe change is possible, and this neighborhood is an example of that.
Cleve Jones first came to this neighborhood in 1973. He says people didn't even call it the Castro then.
Well, I'd read about San Francisco in Life magazine while I was still in high school. They said there were a lot of gay people here, so when I got out of high school, I hitchhiked up.
And it felt good to be around other gay people at that time.
Yeah, I think, you know, people forget what it was like as late as the 70s. You know, it was an enormous level of violence against gay people. So if one was perceived to be gay, as I was early on, you know, it was dangerous. And so we claimed these few blocks of turf as our own and felt relatively safe, though there were a lot of problems with the police and people coming in from outside the neighborhood to beat people up. We had a little neighborhood patrol that tried to look after people. I wasn't very interested in electoral politics until I met Harvey Milk. Harvey persuaded me to cut my hair and go to school and get involved in more traditional politics.
And we should say that as we speak to you right now, we're standing in a plaza that is named for Harvey Milk.
Yes, we're standing at Harvey Milk Plaza at the corner of Castro and Market beneath the giant rainbow flag, which was created by my friend Gilbert Baker. And he lives in New York today and is still sewing rainbow flags. You know, Harvey was just so courageous about being out and open and proud gay man. And during the campaigns, I watched him at the bus stops and the senior centers and the union halls and just how good he was at finding common ground with people. He could begin a conversation with any sort of person you could imagine, find some sort of common ground and build on that. And that was a very important lesson for me.
But Harvey Milk was only in office for a matter of months before he was assassinated, along with the mayor, George Moscone, by another San Francisco supervisor who had resigned. Cleve Jones was in the Castro when he heard that there'd been a shooting. He went to City Hall and found Harvey Milk dead.
The first thing that went through my mind was, it's over. You know, I was in such shock, and it was a horrifying sight, of course. And I just kept thinking, it's over, it's over. We were trapped there in the office as the police bundled up the bodies, and I just thought, everything's over. But then the sun went down, and tens of thousands of people gathered here at this intersection and marched down to City Hall, filled Civic Center, and I realized, you know, I was completely wrong. It wasn't over. It was just beginning.
Jones continued his activism and fight for acceptance, but it wasn't long before the gay community in San Francisco became a center of the AIDS crisis. Jones himself received a positive diagnosis in 1985.
by November of 1985, this neighborhood where we're standing right now had lost over 1,000 people. And in every year on November 27th, people gather here at this intersection and light candles and remember Harvey Milk and George Moscone. And as I was putting up flyers and reminding people of the annual memorial, I stopped and picked up the Chronicle, and the headline said 1,000 dead. And I was so, you know, just horrified by that number because I knew so many of those people. I'd been an activist already for over a decade, and, you know, I pretty much knew everybody in this neighborhood. And of those first 1,000 who had died, a very large number of them were friends of mine, neighbors of mine, or just the, you know, the sort of familiar faces that one sees every day. And right here at this intersection that night, November 27th, 1985, I had stacks of poster board and stacks of magic markers, and I had Harvey Milk's old bullhorn. And as the people gathered, I talked to them, and I said, you know, we've lost a lot more than Harvey. And I asked people to write the names of their friends and neighbors who had been killed by this new disease. And we carried those signs with us in the march. And we left our candles at City Hall, and then I took everyone to the old Federal Building, and some friends of mine had hidden extension ladders there. And we put them up, and we, with big rolls of tape on our wrists, we climbed up and covered the gray stone facade of this building with those names. And I looked at that patchwork of names up on the wall and thought to myself, it looks like some kind of strange quilt. And when I said the word quilt, I thought of my grandma, you know, back in Bee Ridge, Indiana, and the quilts that she'd made. And it was such a warm and comforting and middle class, middle American, traditional family values kind of symbol. And I thought that's the symbol that could help us grieve and also illustrate the enormity of the crisis, because each panel of the quilt is 3x6, the approximate size of a grave. And that was kind of my inspiration for it.
And what kind of a difference do you think it's made?
Well, I think, you know, when I look at the achievements of this past year, I really believe that a lot of this is rooted in our experience with the pandemic. I think before AIDS, the notion of a gay community was a notion. It was hypothetical. But we were proven in a very brutal way. And another thing that happened, and the quilt was part of this, was that America came to know her gay children during the time of our greatest suffering. And while some people exploited that tragedy and used it for their own political ends, a much larger number of people were moved. Their hearts were touched by it. Over those years, I met so many parents who had no clue that their son was gay until he was diagnosed with AIDS. And it forced us to build an infrastructure that we'd never imagined. It forced us to raise and spend funds that we could never have conceived of. It forced people to come out of the closet. And it also, I think, it contributed to a new sense of resolution that after what we'd been through, how dare you say these are not families? What do you mean this isn't a marriage? This is exactly what a marriage looks like. Two people who are devoted to each other, who care for each other in sickness and in health. And we cared for each other through terrible sickness and terrible death. And I think out of that came this new mindset that would not settle for compromises, would not settle for fragments or fractions of equality.
So now what? What's the next fight, do you think?
Well, I'm sure there'll be a new one. You know, it isn't over. There's still too much violence. There's still too many young people committing suicide. There's always the risk of crazy people trying to turn the clock back. And it's going to be very interesting now to see what happens when neighborhoods like this go away. And out of this neighborhood, this concentration of gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender people living together in the same space, came the first gay churches, the first gay synagogues, the first gay film festivals, the first social services, the political power. But now, because of assimilation and acceptance, people no longer feel they have to live in ghettos. I think some people have this notion in social movements that you win a victory and it's permanent and it's complete. You know, the movement needs to continue. There will always be new challenges. There will always be threats.
Did you at any point throughout, especially the 80s, think, you know what, I'm not going to be an activist anymore. I need to just focus on the fact that so many of my own friends have been lost? to this, and I'll let somebody else do this?
I've always been an activist. I mean, there's been times when I had to take a break. There were times when I was ill. There were times when I was very tired. But my activism comes out of my connection to my friends and my community and my neighbors. This is what I do. It's what I've done my whole life. It's what I love the most. And as far as I can discern, I have no other skills or talents. So this is what I do, and I am grateful for it.
Well, Cleve Jones, thank you so much for talking with us.
My pleasure. Thank you. Welcome to the Castro.